to do that maybe?
Yeah, I think it'd be a damn good idea.
Okay, well, thanks for the suggestion. But to be clear, and this is straight from our treasurer too, we do not have a reserve fund.
I understand that.
Okay.
I hope you correct it in the next town meeting. Why did you spend $244,121 on crushed stone in FY18? When you had $65,000 in the budget?
To repair, that was after, let's see, that was the year that we hired
Terry
Delisle, and we completely resurfaced cloudland, portions of high pastures. Where else did we get around to? Roger Bell. I got to look back through the records, but what happened was we were woefully behind. When Terry came on, he said, I have no material to work with on the roads, especially Bunker Hill, heck, the fabric was showing through. And so we made the decision to try to catch up and get those roads back up in shape, which has paid off, I think, because they've held up pretty well this year. The ones that we didn't put materials on were the worst ones every month. But the money left over from the previous year. It was about $100,000, I think.
$137,000.
And so we use that to do that to catch up, you know.
So you spent the $137,000 and the $60,000 that you had in the budget. That's $190,000 or so. So you're like $50,000 more than what you could account for in those two things, right?
No, I'm not sure what the extra that we purchased, the extra $100,000 was to catch up. That was above and beyond the, you know, the regular maintenance. We spend $50,000 or $60,000 on crushed gravel anyway. So that was certainly to do other things. So it was a conscious effort to go ahead and get these roads back up to shape. That's what it boils down to.
Good.
I guess the other thing I would add to what Frank said, some of that's going to be recovered through FEMA. Probably about $53,000 of it.
Yeah. No, only $14,000 of FEMA was for crushed stone.
Okay, I'm talking about the total amount of money that we spent on what Frank's talking about, not just crushed stone.
Well, you spent $244,000 on crushed stone.
Fine, Neil. But I'm trying to make the larger picture that we spent, that
Sorry.
Frank described. So a lot of this has been talked about in meetings in the past. So a lot of what you're describing, Neil, we talked about as a board, right?
Sure, you were
probably in a lot of these meetings. So a lot of the discussions and the same things that Frank is describing right now, we've had these discussions publicly about why we spent so much money, what we were recovering from FEMA, why are we spending so much money on crushed stone? These are all issues that we've talked about before. So I just want to make it clear that this is not the first time this stuff has been talked about.
In FY 2018, the entire balance of the guardrail reserve fund, $2,471, was transferred to the highway operating account. You didn't purchase any band rail during FY 18, so was that money spent for something other than band rail? That's question number 6.
Was there a requirement that it must be spent over band rail? The answer is no. It doesn't have to be spent on band rail. So just so we're getting kind of twisted up on basic management of the operating fund. And just so everybody knows, just because when town voters approve a budget, that's not hard and fast. That is, it's a budget, right? I mean, everybody, we all have our budgets at home, and sometimes you spend more, and sometimes you spend less, and sometimes you can't do the thing that you wanted to do, and you spend the money on something else. It's the same thing with the town budget. The select board has to make decisions throughout the year about what money needs to be spent on. And generally, we try as hard as possible to spend the money on the things that are in the budget. But that's not always true. Sometimes we either overspend on equipment maintenance, on truck maintenance, as we have this year. Sometimes we underspend on other things. And so it's never perfect. So the money that Neil is referencing in the guardrail, that was money that it's really we don't consciously not spend every line item or consciously overspend every line item. If we don't spend money on something, that money in the budget is available to be spent on something else. And that's just how it goes. That's how you manage a budget.
My question was for the guardrail reserve money.
It's not a reserve, Neil.
So the fact that it was not created by a town vote, you discovered that, so you were able to use that money to help pay for the crushed stone.
What that specific money was spent on, who knows? I mean, you're talking about cash, right? So when it's like, you have your own budget, you've got cash in your checking account, and you spend it. And so it's only when Ellen records an expenditure against a specific line item in the budget, that's the only time you know when you've spent money against a specific line item. But the rest of the time, it's just cash. So I'm not really sure what you're getting at here.
I would suggest that you work closely with the auditors next year to get this business straightened about the bridge reserve and the guardrail reserve. If these are not reserve accounts, they shouldn't be shown as reserve accounts in the town report, which they are.
So just so everybody in the audience knows, if you just for reference, and this is what I wrote to Neil, see the select board minutes from April 18, 2018, and the treasurer notes of March 31st. The guardrail reserve is not a voter-created reserve fund, nor is the bridge reserve. Ellen's also said as much. See also the 1991 town report, articles 14 and 15, which authorized expenditures for guardrail and bridges, but did not actually create a reserve fund. And so Ellen said the same thing in her treasurer's notes. There you have it.
You had a question, Art?
The discussion goes back to when Ellen came to the board and she was talking about all these supposed reserve funds.
Right.
And she was given advice from some financial place that told her to get rid of all these smaller reserve funds.
Right.
It was ridiculous to have all these different small reserve funds that didn't amount to anything.
Right.
Like the guardrail reserve fund was $4,000.
Exactly.
So she proposed to the select board to do away with it. They took her advice. They wanted to get rid of it. And they transferred that money somewhere else.
Okay.
Well, that's interesting. That's an interesting comment, Art. But the fact remains, when I read the town report, I see guardrail reserve, which means the money is reserved for guardrails. And we found a way around that by finding that the reserves were never created by town vote, so they don't exist. I hope you get the town report straightened out next year so that it doesn't get confusing.
I think your point is well taken to have actually voter approved reserve funds noted as such, and those others are just either we make them voter-approved reserve funds or we change their nomenclature to suggest that they are not, and they are
just
something
get rid
else.
Of them like you did with the guardrail reserve. That's fine, I don't care, but it's confusing when all of a sudden I know that the statute says that the reserve accounts are under the control of the select board, as long as the select board can spend the money, as long as it's within the guidelines or whatever you want to call it of the enabling vote at town meeting. And I assumed there was for the guardrail, but there wasn't. So then it becomes a mute question, doesn't it? You need to fix it before next town meeting. So I'll wind up with a couple of things here. There seems to be, the select board seems to think that they have to spend the highway surplus that can be carried forward to the next fiscal year. You have to spend all that money in 1 year. Is that true?
No. Who thinks that?
The $137,000 that you had in surplus highway fund in FY18 came from FY17, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Did you have to spend all of that in FY18?
No.
No.
It just keeps carrying and carrying and carrying.
Thank you. And
if you don't spend it, you don't spend it.
And you just keep carrying it forward.
Correct. It automatically is applied to expenditures in the next fiscal year.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
The other thing is on how you handle the town fund or the general fund surplus. Mm-hmm. Now we are taking it to the if you have $100,000 left in the town surplus at the end of the year, you have to vote on, the voters have to vote on that in order to spend it.
That's correct.
It cannot be carried forward like the highway.
Cannot be carried forward.
That's right. I queried or asked 12 towns that surround us how they handle that situation. Six of them do a vote and six of them just do a deficit budget. In other words, they spend it by putting a budget together that has more expenditures than revenues, mm-hmm. which is what your budget shows now.
And
I don't think you need to vote on it.
Well, technically, the voters are voting on it when they vote the budget.
That's exactly how the towns handle it, instead of having a separately warned article.
And
it's a bit confusing.
After Ellen and I had many discussions with Andy Mann regarding how to notate and handle that, we decided to do it that way, and I think I even discussed it with you, as I recall. And it seemed to me, after the previous town report where it was somewhat confusing, we seemed to think that this time it went better. I'm not sure it did, but we thought it did.
Thank you for your time.
I want to respond to Neil's last comment. I think just for the folks here in the room, you know, it could come down to a difference in philosophy, and I'll just share mine. So by law, when the legislature created highway funds and general funds, there's a conscious decision on the part of the legislature to say road maintenance is the most important thing a town does. And that's why money, if there's money left over in the highway fund, that's why it's automatically spent on road maintenance the next year. That is direct intent of the legislature. The same is not true for the general fund. That was a conscious decision of the legislature. And you may get different opinions from the rest of the board, but as a matter of practice, for at least the past 2 years, we as a board have delivered a message to voters to say, we want you to consciously choose what to do with money left over in the general fund. So we as a board have said, yeah, maybe we don't have to, as Neil is saying, maybe you just stick it in the budget. Or maybe you do as what we've been doing, is you have a separate article that says, hey voters, we've got this money left over in the general fund. We really want you to think about what you want us to do with that money, what you want to do with that money. And therefore, it's a conscious choice in a separate article, which in my personal opinion is a better way to get the barometer of the voters, rather than the budget is hard to read sometimes, and it's got a lot of line items. And you don't know necessarily that there's a surplus in there. And you don't know that you're necessarily voting on, oh, we had a surplus? Oh, is this how the surplus is going to get spent? So what we have done the last 2 years, which I personally think is a very good practice, is in the general fund, if we have money left over, we go back to the voters and consciously say, what would you like to do with that money? It's your money. What do you want us to do with it? I think that's a good thing.
I think there's, we really didn't say, what do you want to do with it? Like you would say to your child, what do you want for dinner? We gave them choices,
sure,
which they could either approve,
right,
or disapprove.
They can vote,
but
in.
We didn't go and give them the gamut of what do you want to do,
because
the answers would have been limitless.
But
so let's not deceive them to think that we didn't give them a choice or two which they could vote affirmatively or negatively.
We can't give them a cafeteria, Emily.
Well, then don't say that we did, because we didn't. And that's what you're saying when you say we asked them what to do with it. We did not. We gave them options. They either said, yes, that's a good option, or they could have said, no, we don't want that, and we would have come back with something else.
Right, but it is. So when we as a board, just to counter what Emily's saying, we as a board have a responsibility to propose to voters what to do with that money. We're the ones who are closest to it. We're the ones who have an idea as to what to do with that money. So that's why we craft an article. But voters can vote that down. They can vote that down. And if voters don't like what we propose, the money automatically goes to pay down taxes. So if the board proposes to voters, hey, we think you should do X with the surplus, and voters say, yeah, thanks for the suggestion, we don't like it, they vote the article down. And voters should know that if they vote it down, that money will be used to reduce their taxes.
Are you sure?
Yes.
I've never heard of such.
Yes, I'm sure.
Are you done with your questions, Neil?
Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your questions. Crack ceiling bid. You were only able to get one quote, is that correct?
Yeah, and I just sent an email. I thought I'd send it to y'all. I got a response from the company formerly known as Seal Coating Inc. But the problem was is that my recollection is that we used to hire them for so many days, and I think it was $8,000 a day, maybe. I got that wrong, but it was a certain amount a day. It turns out the seal coating has actually changed, and it's a new company, and so they don't do it by the day because they say, well, we don't know whether to use 500 gallons of material or 800 gallons of material and stuff. And so the email I just sent you sort of explains that that they have several different ways of pricing out seal coating. And so it's just a matter of picking it. The other company that I solicited never responded, and that was Nikon.
Are they still in business?
Yeah, I saw the trucks on the interstate, and I'm surprised because they're the ones that we awarded the contract to last time we had seal coating done. So I don't know, we've got to sort of reevaluate, figure out if we want to do it and how we want to set up the contract. But it's just one of those things that just never got finished because there's a lot of questions as to how to do it. And I provided the email, I apologize, I just sent it to you guys. And basically, he says the day rate is usually for up to 500 gallons, and then a small charge per gallon for anything they use over the 500 gallons. So you estimate that they'll use 500, and then anything. Say if they have a 700 gallon day, they'll charge us for the 500, and then charge us for the extra 200 for the materials. So that way they're covering their labor. They know what that is, and the unknown is the materials. So we just need to figure out. That being said, he did not provide me with a price per day or a price per gallon if we went over 500 gallons. So just another project that needs to be.
Do you want me to try and get hold of, do you have any contact information?
I've sent everything to you.
For Nikon?
It's called.
This is seal coating. Do you have any contact information for Nikon? And I can write them, see if we can get a response. I'll write them again.
Yeah,
if you can find it, send it to me, or maybe you have it, Art.
I have the card now, it's shop.
Would you send me the information in the morning?
Tomorrow morning.
That'd be great. Pardon? Ona?
Because you talk about the crack sealing and stuff, just above Jimmy's Road, right across is that great big crack, and water's coming out of it. Wait, is that something that the crack sealing is going to seal up, or what's the problem there?
The crack sealing is designed to work the other way. It's instead of the water from going into the road, but correct.
But what's the problem with the road right there? Why?
That's probably it hasn't been operating for months.
Really?
Yeah.
You noticed that too, huh, John?
Yeah.
It even rained when you were down in Georgia, you know? Or wherever you were. Were you in Georgia? No.
No, South Carolina.
Anyway, we'll try and get another response from Nikon if you get me that information. And then we'll try and get worked up here for pretty soon. Hiring of Bob Merrill for IT advisory services.
So I talked to Bob, and he agreed. So I don't know that we formally voted on hiring him.
We asked Becky to see if she could get him to come in, and she did, and we said to make it quite clear that this was not a volunteer position, this was paid IT services, and I gave Becky that message.
Right, but I guess I'm asking, I don't recall. Did we vote last time to actually hire him or not on a contract basis?
No, we were asked.
We were going to ask him, right. So I move that we hire Bob on a contract basis to assist the board and the town on working through some of our IT issues.
Second.
We should also actually, while I'm at it, we should probably include what we're going to pay him. I don't think Bob's going to be that picky. I actually didn't discuss with him an hourly rate.
I think we better ask him what kind of an hourly rate he wishes to get. I think it would be presumptuous to just pop in an hourly rate for him.
Why don't I try and get an answer from him via email, and then let's come back to it.
Hiring of human resources assistants?
So we discussed it. Actually, we voted on it, that we would seek getting some assistance. I think I would recommend that we take a couple of different routes. I think one, we should advertise, as we have should, for the position, and I'm happy to draft up what we need, a job description. So we can advertise for that, and then we can also ask Jill Muir if she would be willing to be a resource from VLCT, and if VLCT might offer us a contract situation, or if she has recommendations, that would be another thing we could do at the same time, is advertising for someone, but I think we should pursue both of those avenues.
And just what kind of an hourly, how many hours, or how much are you expecting this to...
This is going to be very...
What are you expecting?
It's going to be very occasional. It's going to be, you know, probably... it's hard to predict, but, you know, at most 5 hours a month, you know, something like that. It's not a lot of work. It's sort of the occasional advice. And also helping us navigate through the process we talked with Jill.
I think we can advertise for it, but I think getting somebody, you know, advertising is a, you know, I don't know, it's not like it's an actual job.
Well, it could be, and just, I think this position could be different because there are a lot of HR people out there who actually do this kind of thing on a part-time basis. And they have a lot of clients that they assist in the HR arena. So I think we probably have better luck for this type of job than we would others. It's not like trying to hire for the highway crew. But there's a lot, I know a lot of people who have a bunch of different clients and they do HR work. So we could have better luck.
Well, we also have Cindy here that's done quite a bit of HR work in her 25 years at Hitchcock, and that might be something that she could do for us. She certainly has had some experience in that regard.
Yeah, and I think that's fine. I think we should do as we have done with our highway crew position. We should create a job description. We should advertise it, and if she wants to apply for it, she can apply for it too.
Well, before you advertise it, I'd like to see the job description that you've come up with.
Sure. I'll draft one up. So, do we want to vote on me drafting up a job description? And do we want to vote to have me also talk to Jill about what she might be able to offer, what VLCT might also be able to offer?
Well, why don't you do the job description first, and then we'll know what we're all talking about. I find this a little bit nebulous as to what this person is going to do for us and exactly how much money or time it's going to take. And I cannot really sign on to a nebulous job description, and because I don't think the rest of the board knows exactly what this position is going to entail, quite frankly. And so you may be very clear in your mind, but I'm certainly quite fuzzy. Anybody else have a comment?
Would you like me to try and describe what I mean? So, just so everybody knows, Jill Muir from VLCT came in and spoke to the board about basically how to manage HR, how to manage people from an administrative standpoint, and especially how to do personnel reviews. And one of the areas where the board really needs to improve is managing paperwork, getting reviews done, having regular routine conversations with employees, managing compensation, figuring out benefits packets, you know, a whole array of personnel things that we don't, in my opinion, don't do very well at all. And we as a board talked last time that we need professional assistance, somebody to actually advise us and help us do a better job at being personnel, our personnel management side of things. So that's kind of the rough sketch of what we need help on. So that's what we discussed with Jill, and that's what we discussed as a board last time we talked about it. And I, you know, personally, I think it's something we really do need help with.
So Scott, do you know if the HR department provides services by the hour, like the attorney side, because we can get attorney advice from VLCT for like
pretty good rate, yeah.
$92 an hour, I think was the last thing we got. I guess the question is, does Jill's department provide a service like that?
I think they do. I can find out from her.
And that's what I think that's what you were asking, is to find out whether or not she can do that.
Right. So I'm happy to write up a job description so we can advertise it, and I'm also happy to ask VLCT, ask Jill what they also can offer.
I think that would be the starting point, actually, is the LCP. We're going to get our best pricing there. And if they're willing to do that for us, then there won't be any reason to advertise it. If they can't provide everything we need, then that'll help simplify the job description of what we're going to be looking for.
All right, so again, I'm happy to talk to her about that and get some information for the board.
Yes.
Just a quick question. Was this budgeted for? And if not, the question was raised, like, we didn't budget for potential hire of a new road crew. And I'm not saying that the expenses are equal or whatever, but it seems like there's a lot more discussion on allowing these items to go through than to go with another road crew member or figure out, you know, if let the road crew that we have, the three of them, work more overtime this summer to kind of catch up because we're way behind. And you know, one guy usually goes on the roadside mower with a three-man crew. That doesn't leave much road grading and culvert skating being put in. So I just kind of wondered, you know, that was kind of pushed aside because it wasn't really budgeted. We want to see how the new road foreman does, kind of get a feel for everything and why this is okay to get this kind of attention. Yes,
so
it's not budgeted.
So we have a line item in the budget called professional fees. And, you know, board members may have different views on it, but, you know, that could very clearly fall into the category of professional. You know, we have to hire people for professional advice on a regular basis, whether it's attorneys or otherwise. So, I mean, in my opinion, that would fall pretty squarely in the budget line item for professional fees. And we are actually, I'm looking at our budget right now, and we are way overspent on it, way overspent for the fiscal year. So, to your point, but, you know, this gets back to priorities. Gets back to all the things we were talking about in terms of Neil's comments, and the highway budget is... Sometimes you spend more, sometimes you spend less, and that's how it is. But we do have a line item in the budget for legal and professional fees.
Right, and just as a comment, basically it costs us $62,000 to hire a person, just entry level.
Much bigger, yeah.
That's just if they don't work any overtime. So, you know, the comparison is, you know, $62,000 compared to probably
maybe $2,000 or $3,000.
Well, yeah, I mean, I figured the thing
would
be anywhere near close.
Yeah. Just see. So, do we need John is
reading
out. Do we need a motion? Or are you game just to...
You could just give that to me as an assignment. I'm happy to take it.
Yeah.
Why don't you call Jill and see what she has to say, and you can report back at the next meeting, and then we'll go from there, depending on whether they will do this kind of consulting work.
Sounds good.
Okay, meeting rules of procedure.
I asked for this to be on the agenda. This is just a discussion for now. We can talk more about it later, but. We're kind of, you know, we're not doing great, in my opinion, on getting our act together on some of managing minutes, and I'm not trying to put all this on you, Cynthia. It's actually all of us. We have gotten a little bit sloppy since the past couple of months, and we seem to be inventing new rules. Sometimes at some of our meetings, and if we're gonna adopt on the fly rules, we should put them into our rules of procedure.
Would you like to elaborate as to what you're talking about?
Well, so the example the other night when we were that meeting we had last week, I guess it was. We've never had a practice of, if you finish an agenda item, waiting until Yeah, if we finish an agenda item at, say, 6:30, but the next agenda item is not scheduled until 7, we're not going to sit around and wait until 7 until the next agenda item comes up. And I know you were trying to be responsive to people who might have wanted to come to the regular meeting who thought there was going to be an executive session. But we don't need to be stuck on, there's a principle here, and this is, as VLCT says, this is a meeting in the public, not a meeting of the public. And so we shouldn't hamstring ourselves as a board. Certainly we need to be mindful of the public and people wanting public input, but we've got to carry on with our meetings and get our work done. And it seems like sometimes we're inventing new rules that are not not getting incorporated. We also, one of the things that's been mentioned is not really sticking to our 2 minutes for public comment and trying to keep that down to a minimum. Things like that, just keeping the meetings moving along. And I guess I just want us to be mindful of when we're inventing new procedures on the fly, that we just make sure we put them into our rules of procedure.
Speak to the, I wasn't here at the last meeting, and I think there's a difference of if we get done a topic at 6:30 and the next thing isn't supposed to be until 6:45, say 7, we get done, meeting starts at 7, we get done at 7:30, the next topic isn't done until 7, doesn't start until 7:45. There's no point in waiting around unless there's a specific person that's been invited to discuss that. But I think if you are warning a meeting starting at 6, that is executive session, and the open meeting starts at 7, that you are then having an open meeting during a meeting that you advertise to be a closed session. So I think in that case, you do need to wait until the 7 o'clock time, even if you're sitting here twiddling your thumbs for half an hour and there are people that are waiting. But I'm not going to, if I'm Joe Public waiting to come to the open session at 7, I'm not going to show up at 6:30 because maybe they're starting early. It was warned to start at 7. And that's the open meeting you should start, regardless of when you got done your private meeting.
Right. And you weren't here, but just how it actually ended up playing out is we never went into executive session.
That being said,
you get voted.
It doesn't matter.
Right, but I mean, still, that time slot was for executive session.
Right, but so we also have to be careful about how we're warning things. That was not to get too deep into the weeds, but we should be careful how we're actually warning things too, and not warning them as separate meetings, because it wasn't a separate meeting. It was all one meeting. It wasn't a special meeting and then a regular meeting. It was all one meeting. And it shouldn't be warned as separate meetings. Anyway, I don't want to belabor it. I think it's just something for us to be mindful of. Is when we're making stuff up on the fly, we should just make sure we bring it back to our rules of procedure.
I'll get to it in just a second. Mm-hmm. Because that's directed at me and I made the decision to wait until 7, I would like to respond. When one puts an executive session before a regular meeting or a special meeting, as that particular one was, and one says that there will be an executive session for an hour, and then we will have the regular meeting, regular special meeting at 7, then I firmly believe, and I still believe, that we should wait for the public to show up until 7. Cindy asked when she should come, and I said 7. And the public that saw the notice and wished to come came at 7. They didn't come out at 6 here and wait, which they thought was going to be an executive session. Because of a quorum and all, that did not occur. And that's fine. I have no problem with that. but to expect that you're going to be an open meeting where you expect public to come and perhaps participate or perhaps just observe, if you start the meeting a half an hour before you say you're going to in the public portion of the meeting, that is not appropriate in my estimation. It may be legal, but I don't want to explain myself to all those people why we started at 6:30 when we had said we would start that portion of the meeting at 7. That appears to me to be violating the spirit of an open meeting law. And you may disagree, and I probably expect that you will, but that's okay too. And if indeed and when you might become chairman, you can run it your way. In my particular instance, I don't want to take the grief from the public that says, you said you'd start at 7, but you did it all before we got there. And that was inappropriate, and it was. Oh, no.
And just to go on that, I am a member of the public. I read the way the thing was warned and noticed. It is also a meeting that had been skipped over because it wasn't warned properly the first time around. And I have to agree, I came up here at 7 o'clock for the open meeting. And I find one lady at the door, two people sitting here, and one person on the phone.
And we waited
and
for
And I
you.
Expected the... And if I had come up here at 7 and that meeting would have been over, I would have been some kind of pissed. Because it was warned for the open meeting to be at 7 o'clock. Just the way it was on the computer.
And that's how we did it.
Thank you.
So, I guess, we can agree to disagree. One thing that everybody should understand is that just because we put we're going to have an executive session in agenda doesn't mean we're going to.
And is that the public's fault?
No.
Well, all right then. You answered your own question.
Right.
It's not the public, so the public meeting started at 7, just the way it should be.
So let me explain, right? If we notice an executive session at 6, and we don't actually go into executive session, we're in an open meeting, right?
Not according to your agenda, if you're talking about following your own rules.
So,
it's not the public's fault that there weren't enough people here to have your meeting.
Again, that could lead to
other problems. I mean, if that became a habit, whether on purpose or not, one could accuse you of warning an executive session to then have a public meeting to discuss things that you didn't want to have public comment on, because you could then go, all right, let's put these things at 7 o'clock, we're going to have an executive session. No, let's not have it tonight. Let's get these things through because we don't want to have any difficulties.
And to boot, there was no recording of it either. May I speak?
Yes.
Law or no law, the common understanding is that a meeting is when it is warned to be, if it is a public meeting. So as a matter of public relations, you should conform to that understanding. And executive sessions used commonly to be at the end of the meeting, which would avoid this problem. And I know you want to go home and go to bed, so what? It does avoid this particular conflict.
Unfortunately, they've been criticized for having executive sessions at the end.
Kind of a no-win situation. So.
We've been criticized at both ends, and that's okay. In this particular instance, we had it at the beginning because the person that we were going to discuss the matters with was available earlier in the evening and not later. And so we changed the timing to accommodate that issue being a Friday night and all. Any more comment on this subject, Scott?
No, I'm fine.
Okay, current interpersonal dynamics of the board.
Uh, I don't know how much we want to get into this tonight, but I think in general, there's been a lot of losing my voice. I'm not sure how much I'm going to be able to talk to anymore, but I guess I would just say we should learn how to get along a little bit better sometimes, and me included. I'm not putting this all on other people. I'm just as guilty as other people. But there's been, you know, a lot of tension sometimes, and I feel like a lot of things get said sometimes, board member against board member, and sometimes town officials to board members, and I don't know, sometimes it seems pretty downright mean. And and again, I'm not shying away from any of my responsibility in all this. I think we should just figure out how to get along better sometimes. That's all.
All right, moving on. Expand scope of work of attorney job descriptions.
Attorney or highway?
No, this was work of attorney.
It's not a job.
Job descriptions is underneath. Excuse me. I added that underneath.
So we hired an attorney to help the board with settlement discussions with Purple Crown. And things have gotten busy. A lot of stuff has come up. And he's been kind enough to help us out on some other matters. But Joe McLean expressed to Frank and I via email a couple of days ago that he's getting a little bit nervous getting pulled into a lot of different things without having authority from the board to take on these additional requests. And we either need to give him a longer leash, give him broader responsibilities in general, or at a minimum, approve what the Planning Commission needs in terms of advice from him. But it's kind of been a busy season for us in terms of legal advice. So I wonder if the board might want to even just hire Schitzel Pages, even if temporarily, bring him on as our town attorney so we don't have to keep going through this. Or if we want to do something more narrow, just approve what the Planning Commission needs and get that done. But they do need help.
Just a comment, if I may. I guess, first of all, I want to thank all the board members that serve this town, even if you guys have good and bad days. But and I did get your email, Scott, that you would, after I guess you got the call from Joe McLean about the Planning Commission wanting some legal advice. And I was out all day, so I didn't get back until late that night. And I saw that you had already corresponded with Ben Brickman, who we authorized from the Planning Commission to contact Joe McLean. And we had a very narrow scope, and it was Two Rivers recommended that the Planning Commission seek a legal opinion on some questions, rather broad questions, and we narrowed it down to two specific questions that we needed to answer before we warn a public meeting, which we're planning on warning in July. We have to warn that in advance and get our final draft out, and we had some issues that were unclear to Two Rivers. And so we have $300 in our budget for the Planning Commission for this fiscal year, and we have $3,500 in for next year. And if I read the job description on the website for what the Planning Commission duties are, is on number 11 on Title 24, Chapter 117, Subchapter 2. That we have the ability to retain staff and consult assistance in carrying out our duties and powers. And we also have on 13 perform such other acts and functions as deemed necessary. So I don't think we need
In this particular case, I guess your budget is overspent on professional fees, so I guess if you had money there, you might rather take it from that bucket rather than our $300 bucket or our $3,500 bucket next fiscal year. But I think it's our responsibility to seek legal advice, and I don't think it is a select board. I don't think we should act autonomously with the rules and regulations that we are governed for, and I don't think it, even though we appreciate the fact that you'll probably approve it, and we work closely with the select board in past, but I don't see why it's your decision to approve or disapprove this. It's our decision.
Oh, I mean, we're the ones who have to hire him. And at the end of the day.
Why do you have to hire him? It says right here that I guess, why can't the planning commission hire him?
Well, you know,
we can hire Joe.
I guess. I don't know. I don't know if it always has to be the board or not.
We made a decision to go ahead, and then we just got an email back from you that your board has to approve it first, and I guess it seemed like the authority is being absorbed from the planning commission.
Oh, I mean, I don't think that's not the intent at all. I mean, so right now Joe is representing the board. Right?
Well, he also can represent us too.
He can. You can. So,
and that's what we tried to do.
Yeah, I honestly I don't know if the planning commission has independent authority to hire an attorney. I guess it does, according to what you're saying.
Well, I'm just.
I honestly don't know. All I know is that, in general, when it comes to legal matters, as it relates to the town, the select board is responsible for legal representation. I have no idea whether the planning commission can hire attorneys on its own. I don't know. That would be a question for VLCT.
Okay.
But Joe